Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You don't think that it's time that somebody cared enough to have a dream?
Why are you getting so upset? This is not about you.
Yes, it is. You are a human affront to all women, and I am a woman.
At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you are. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
How do you go about getting an exorcism?
I beg your pardon?
Hi, this is Mark Kermode. Thanks for downloading this Kermode on Film podcast. In this episode, we're glad to welcome back Jack Howard for another head-to-head. In previous episodes, I've chewed the fat with Jack on films like The Shining and The Dark Knight trilogy. But on this episode, we turn our attention to Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
In your universe, there's only one Spider-Man. But there is another universe. It looks and sounds like yours, but it's not.
My name's Miles Morales.
So, Jack, the last time we were together, we talked about Stanley Kubrick's film The Shining. We wanted to do something a little more up-to-date, a little more contemporary. Which film have we chosen to talk about for this episode?
We're going to talk about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which is the seventh film, I think, that's come out of about Spider-Man.
Okay, I'm going to let you start this, because basically, you and I are completely different generations, and there are things which are home territory for you and things which are home territory for me. So I began with The Shining because I remember when that first came out. So
I remember when Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse first came out.
Yeah.
I remember where I was.
Okay, so take it away. What is the film, and tell us what you like about it?
So Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is an animated movie written by Phil Lord and produced by Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who made 21 Jump Street, 22 Jump Street, the Lego movie. So they are sort of pioneers of this generation's comedy and definitely animation as well. It is a weird blend of stop-motion-y looking comic book CGI animation, and it is about Miles Morales, who is a new version of a Spider-Man who's been in the comic book world for maybe about 10 years now. He is a black kid from Brooklyn.
Black Hispanic,
correct. Yes, that is correct. Sorry. And he gets bit by a radioactive spider and starts getting all the spider powers that we're used to. But in this universe, there is it is not our own. And there is a cross-universe MacGuffin that allows different spider people to enter
the
this universe
world.
And they all have some time together.
Yeah.
I loved this movie so much. I've seen it twice now. I went to like a little fan screening of it that they put on, and
Well,
it was just like for kids and that. They just had like, rather than just a press screening, they put it on for like families.
Okay.
And I went on along to that one.
Like a Sunday morning screening.
Yeah. And they had all these little sort of like masks on sticks, and I was properly getting involved with all of it. I was so excited. I'm such a massive fan of Spider-Man. He's my absolute favourite.
Okay.
He's been with me since, well, before I can remember he wasn't there. This movie is everything that I love about movies. I have flaws and criticisms of it, but mostly I just think it's just this overwhelming experience that has like intimate moments that you would want from like the best dramas, but it has like the hugest moments that you would want from the things that remind me of 2001 A Space Odyssey, like there's huge like LSD sort of like trippy moments
in it
blended together with these like gorgeous little character interactions, my favorite of which being the interactions between Miles and Peter Parker from the other universe, this sort of father and son-esque relationship, but also the relationship he has with his own father and also his uncle, played by Mahershala Ali, called Aaron Davis. Like, it just seems to be this like story about a kid who is just searching for his place and doesn't know where he belongs and is looking for anybody that he relates to and for anybody to take interest in him.
Spider-Man. I mean, this guy swings in once a day, zip-zap-zop in his little mask and answers to no one, right?
Yeah, Dad, yeah.
I love you, Miles.
Yeah, I know, Dad.
You gotta say I love you back.
Dad, are you serious?
I wanna hear it.
You wanna hear me
I love you, Dad.
You're dropping me off out of school?
I love you, Dad.
Look at this place.
Dad, I love you.
Dad, I love you.
That's a copy.
It's just brilliant. I don't really have any bad things to say about it. Like, I have a few little nitpicks, I think.
Okay.
But I just think it's just a wonderful experience, and it's so great to see a Spider-Man movie on the big screen that explores all the exciting elements of the character, but also the sort of the intimate stuff as well. And also, it's nice for this generation to have a brand new face to put all that Spider-Man stuff on. And the main thing about the movie being that anybody can wear the mask. Like, yeah. I love that, because that's been the big thing about Spider-Man, you know, ever since he was created, is that his face is entirely covered. So you have no idea who's behind that mask. Iron Man tells you who he is. Batman has, like, some gaps so you can see it's just a white guy. Like, this, the same with Superman, you can see his face. With Spider-Man, he's completely covered from head to toe, so you have no idea who or what it is.
Okay.
And that's a little bit explored in the first Raimi Spider-Man, where they're just there's all these almost talking head interviews where they're just like, oh, who knows who it is? Could be a man, could be a woman. Like, there's all this talk of it, but it is just, again, just a white guy.
Yeah.
So it's very, very nice to see a black Hispanic kid, a woman, a pig.
Yes. Pig talker.
Yeah. All getting the chance to show that the character in itself can be translated onto so many different faces, and it doesn't really matter who it is, you can still relate to it.
You want to know what happened to you? I can teach you to be Spider-Man.
I love this burger. So delicious. One of the best burgers I've ever had. You have money, right? I'm not very liquid right now.
I think you're going to be a bad teacher.
How am I supposed to save the whole world?
You can't think about saving the world. You have to think about saving one person.
One thing I know for sure, don't do it like me. Do it like you.
Brooklyn! Stop us now.
So I saw that. I'm not somebody who's a comics book aficionado. When I was a kid, I think the only comics I really read was I had these two compendiums that were given to me. I think one of my parents went away to America or something, came back with Superman from the 30s to the 70s and Batman from the 30s to the 70s, which was like these two sort of compendium stuff. And I read and loved both of those. And I remember reading some Spider-Man comic books because they were considered to be a little bit edgy. They were considered to be sort of a little bit, you know, there was something about them. But I was never a sort of huge devotee. And I went in to see Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse knowing very little about it, other than that I couldn't quite get my head around the title. And not, I don't think I was even certain whether it was all animated or whether some of it was animated, so I knew almost nothing. And I really enjoyed it. And I really enjoyed a number of things about it. Firstly, I thought it was really funny. I thought it was really properly funny. Secondly, I loved the animation. I love the fact that it had that kind of look of the comic book about it, you know, the dots and the lines.
Yeah, and how they were animated as well.
No,
the texture of it was
really, really well done. And I thought that it had a proper slapstick sensibility. I don't mean that in a bad way.
I mean, it does.
Properly kinetic, you know, things banging into each other in which you had a sense
and
of
and a rhythm to it as well. So much like
well-timed
pieces of comic.
No, exactly. Timing is absolutely the thing. And it's interesting that, you know, in my in my lifetime, my sort of recent memory of Spider-Man, so I remember going to see the Sam Raimi Spider-Man when it first came out, and I reviewed, I think it must have been, maybe it was the second Spider-Man movie for The Observer. And I remember writing in my review, you know, it's funny, because I remember the court cases around Evil Dead, if you're my age. When Evil Dead came out, which was Sam Raimi's, you know, breakthrough feature, which was based on a shorter film that he made before, but it was his first feature film, and he made it with money that was raised through, you know, dentists and local businesses. And it was distributed here by Palace Pictures, and went out on video, and it was one of the things that got caught up in the video nasties scare. And Palace actually defended the film in court. It was brought up on obscenity charges. And during the video nasty scare, which this is way before your time, but basically video dealers and video distributors got hit with obscenity prosecutions, and most of them they didn't want to fight them. Of course they didn't, because they just wanted them to go away, so they would pay a fine or they would suffer in panic. Palace decided to fight the Evil Dead case. And there was a famous case at Snaresbrook Crown Court in which they brought out all these expert witnesses. I think Derek Malcolm was one of them, in which people argued that The Evil Dead was not an obscene work. But it's The Evil Dead was in court in Britain, and it being argued that it had the power to potentially deprave and corrupt a significant proportion of its likely audience.
Those girls were watching a scene from a horror film called Evil Dead 1, which broke all financial records in the cinema and as a home video when released 4 years ago. Yet it was attacked by some as being no more than a video nasty, and the Department of Public Prosecutions took court action to ban it. The action actually failed, but the arguments will rage again when its sequel, Evil Dead 2, hits the cinema screens next week.
And then I was writing this review of the second Spider-Man in The Observer saying, isn't it incredible that this guy went from being the guy who made this thing that was a great cause célèbre and on the front page of tabloids, you know, banned these, to somebody who is now making the biggest, most kind of, you know, family friendly. You know, blockbuster. Isn't that an extraordinary thing? And I remember saying in the review of that, that's kinetic sense that Raimi had. We spoke about this before in relation to The Shining, that Raimi always had a kind of comedic sense of timing, and that's what made The Evil Dead work. That's what made The Evil Dead scary, is that it was the Three Stooges, but with blood and guts standing in for custard pies. And the best bits about the Raimi Spider-Man movies were when it got that kinetic sense right, and the worst bits about the Raimi movies was when all that went out the window and the films didn't turn out to be what he wanted, particularly in later on. And
I don't talk about that. No, that's fine.
So then we had that version, then we had the Andrew Garfield incarnation, now we've got the latest incarnation, which actually I think is really good, because then what we have now with Tom Holland is actually
like this John Hughes teen movies set in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, you know, that works for, so I've gone through all of those versions, and then watching Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, the thing that I'm thinking is not, oh well, Spider-Man has had so many incarnations in the comic books, then of course it's perfectly brilliant that the whole point about it is that this character can be anyone, can be anything. I'm thinking, I've already seen three versions of Spider-Man in recent past in the cinema, and I have no problem with that at all, because each one is completely different. And the thing I really loved about the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse was that when you had all the different incarnations of spider person, I suppose, in the same world, they were all in the same world, but they all appeared to occupy the space that they were in, seemed to be defined by who they were. So the way in which they moved, the way in which they related physically to the world around them, it was almost like they were all in their own universes whilst all being together in the same universe. And there were certain sequences in which, particularly the stuff with Peter Parker, because there's this absurd,
completely different animation style.
Yeah, completely different animation style, and yet somehow they knit it together. So you don't go, hold on, this is like literally just watching somebody gluing two bits of different things together. And I mean, there is the joke about, you know, how's that for a comic book? But how's that for a cartoon, isn't it? But I thought it was really clever that each one of them occupied the world that they were meant to be in. Penny Parker and, you know, and yet they were all together in the
and
same
the whole
frame.
Thing about, like, Spider-Noir, like, having, like, why is it windy? We're in a basement.
Kingpin knows we're coming. We're going to be outnumbered.
Don't be so sure. You might need these. You think you're the only people who've got to come here?
Hey, fellas.
Is he in black and white?
Where's that wind coming from? We're in a basement.
Wherever I go, the wind follows. And the wind, it smells like rain.
Hi, guys. Konnichiwa. Hajimemashite, yoroshiku.
This could literally not get any weirder.
It can get weirder. I just washed my hands. That's why they're wet. No other reason.
Okay.
Now, I have one question come criticism, and it's this. Before I saw the film, somebody sent me, a friend of mine who works in the technical side of film, sent me a message saying, are you going to go see Into the Spider-Verse? I said yes. He said, get in touch with me afterwards, because I have a technical question that I want to ask you. So my interest was piqued, and I saw the film, and I thought, okay, I know exactly what the technical question is. I saw it in 2D. Did you see it in 2 or 3?
2D.
Fine. Does it exist in 3D as well? There is.
I don't know. I haven't seen that anywhere. Okay. But I just try and, like, sort of...
That's fine.
Zone that out now.
When you were watching it in 2D, Did you find it distracting that there were large sections in which the background appeared to be an unrectified 3D?
There were sometimes when it was even like a two-shot when you could see the other person's face, and that was obviously being blurred out, mm-hmm. and it looked like they were like it was doubled.
Yeah, and yeah. There were large sequences in which stuff happening in the background. Everyone knows this, but the way stereoscopy works, the further away from the point of convergence you get, the further separated the images become. So if something comes right towards you, the image separates up. If something goes right away from you, the image will separate. And there were moments in which there was people in the background who were clearly doubled. I mean, very, very clearly doubled. And at first I was thinking, hang about, because I saw this in a paying cinema in Central West End. The first thing I thought was, hang about a minute, are they showing me an unrectified 3D version? I did watch it for about 5 minutes, wondering whether or not they actually had the wrong version, but then knowing that this friend of mine had said, I've got a technical question I want to ask you about. Then, because it only happened in certain scenes, it was evident that it can't have been the wrong version.
It was a choice.
Yeah, and then I started to wonder whether what they'd done, because the way in which you do any animation like that is composite, you know, composite creation of the image, whether they had used the 3D background by mistake or just... Anyway, it turns out that it's a deliberate choice. It is a deliberate choice, and the idea was that by putting the background slightly squiff, slightly unrectified, slightly out of focus, what it was meant to do is to draw your eye to the stuff that's in the front of the frame that was in focus. My problem is, for me, it had exactly the opposite effect.
Your eyes went,
ooh. I went, why is that? And it's not that it was slightly out of focus, it's that it was literally two images, one onto the other, split in a way which implied an unrectified stereoscopy. And that, I know this is a very small hill, and I do think that if that's the only thing that I had a problem with, that tells you an awful lot about the film. But did it distract you at all? Because I did find it distracting.
I didn't find it distracting for very long. I definitely noticed it at times, and I noticed it more on people's faces than the background. My eyes must have been drawn where I was supposed to go for most of it, but okay. I definitely know what you're talking about.
Did you think at one point that what they were trying to do was to reproduce that thing that you get when comic books were printed, that sometimes the colours would be slight, you know, the red would be slightly one way and the green would be slightly another way? Or did you...
I just thought that the texture of the whole thing looked like a comic book, so yes, I think that without thinking specifically about that thing,
okay.
I think the whole thing, I was like, this just feels...
But
like
did you ever think it looks like unrectified 3D?
Yes, especially on the second time, when I saw that person's face when it was doubled.
Okay.
It was a close-up of them, and it was like a faded double. And I thought it looked a little bit like...
So do you think, as an aesthetic decision, that was a good decision or a bad decision?
I don't think it was either. I think it was like...
It wasn't either.
It was sort of like, like, it's not the best thing about it, is it? Like, I think that...
It's not the best thing about it. There's this distracting thing that makes you go, am I watching this in unrectified 3D?
I think that it probably would have been better if it wasn't, if that didn't come into your mind, especially because it looks so... They probably didn't even think it did look like unrectified 3D. They probably just wanted to do... something different, and it didn't even come to their
but it
minds.
Did look like that.
Yes, it did.
It did. Okay, fine. So, I think for me, that's the one thing. Fine, but I can park it. And actually, it says a lot about the film that I did park it and I did get on with it, because I tend to be terribly fidgety about that sort of thing. And something like that has the potential to completely mess a movie up for me. I remember seeing a movie called, I think it was All the Mornings of the World. It was a film about somebody playing a stringed instrument and the fingering that they were using was wrong. And that was it, the whole thing. The film wasn't about that, but the whole film was completely destroyed for me by the fact that I didn't believe they were actually playing the instrument. And that is the kind of thing that could have got under my skin, and it didn't. And the reason it didn't was because everything else in the film was working so well and was snapping to attention that I just kind of, you know, I got over it. Do you think there are precedents of other films that have done a similar thing? What would you compare it to? Because I was sitting there thinking, I haven't seen this done before.
The only thing I can compare it to is another Spider-Man video game called The Ultimate Spider-Man from years ago, which also it was designed to look like a comic book.
Okay.
And that was that's the only thing that it made me think of, because the rest of it just seemed so incredibly unique that... And so ambitious, like not only in terms of its visual style, but also the story it was telling. Like, this is a family movie. Like, it's made obviously for everybody.
So you said you watched it with a bunch of kids.
Yeah, and on the second viewing as well, which was a paying theatre, there was a little boy sat next to me who was loving it, like, and just so excited by all of it, and that just like filled my heart up. Like, I was just so happy that he was having a great time with it. But it's about interdimensional universes and quantum physics, and like that's what leads, you know, that's what starts the plot off.
Hey guys,
Wanda.
It's Gwen, actually.
Oh, you know her. Very cool.
I'm from another dimension. I mean, another dimension. All right, people, let's start at the beginning. My name is Gwen Stacy. For the last 2 years, I've been the one and only Spider-Gwen. I joined a band, saved my dad. And one day this weird thing happened. And I mean, like, really weird. I was blown into last week. Literally. I landed in New York, but not my New York. Let's go.
How many more spider people are there?
Save it for Comic-Con.
What's Comic-Con?
I can't believe that they do it so seamlessly and make it so not complicated. Yeah. And so easy for you to understand that they come from this glowing thing, and when they go back in, they go to their own world.
Yeah.
Like... it's the little details.
Although that is very, I mean, there is now an audience, people who've grown up on Doctor Who, in which
exactly,
that is the basic Doctor Who plot. Because again, we've had umpteen incarnations of Doctor Who now. For the first time, we have a female incarnation of Doctor Who. Everyone said, you can't do that. The whole time-space continuum will explode. Oh no, well, it's fine. And it's absolutely fine. But in a way, because, you know, kids growing up with that kind of science fiction, and I'm sure it's the same is true of comic books, there is a brilliant scene in... the Richard Gere remake of Breathless, in which he goes into the store in Los Angeles and he's obsessed with Silver Surfer. And there is this kid who comes up to Richard Gere and just suddenly and says this thing about, oh, Silver Surfer sucks. And Richard Gere says, what do you mean the Silver Surfer sucks? Silver Surfer, and he says, yeah, well, he's got the power cosmic, but he doesn't go. Why doesn't he just go? They're all after him. And he says, well, you know, he's in love with the planet and he's in love with the girl. And he goes, yeah, Silver Surfer. And they have this, basically this argument, which is the center of what Breathless is about, which is, why doesn't he just go? Why is he staying? Because he's in love, blah de blah de blah. And it happens in a conversation with a kid about comic books, because Jim McBride is doing a thing which is, if you read comic books, you already understand all this stuff, you know. Yeah. That it's cosmic. But and I thought that the thing that Spider-Verse did was it imagined that anyone who'd seen science fiction television or read comic, that's fine.
You get it.
It's fine. We know all about that stuff.
I love that it's like passed off as a joke as well at one point, where he says, like, are you from a parallel universe and now you're stuck here? And he's and he does this whole explanation and goes, really, that was just a guess?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
My name is Peter Parker. I'm pretty sure you know the rest. I saved the city, fell in love, then I saved the city again and again and again. Look, I'm a comic book, a serial, I did a Christmas album, and a so-so popsicle. But this isn't about me. Not anymore.
So I think I want to get into some spoilers now. So
okay,
if you haven't seen Into the Spider-Verse, please
stop
switch
listening.
Off and come back.
Yeah.
And listen to us talk about the movie you saw.
Yeah.
I wasn't ready to see Spider-Man die.
Okay.
Like, so on a separate note...
Did it upset you?
Very much so.
Oh, okay.
Very much so. Like, I didn't know that's where this film was going to go.
Right.
And it happens in, what, the first 15 minutes?
Yes.
15, 20 minutes? Like, he gets murdered. And this was going to say, on a separate note, like, this film is properly scary at times. Mm. And I can't remember the last time I saw a kids movie that made me like feel like, oh, if I was a kid, that would frighten me.
Well, except Snow White and all those.
But that's what I mean. It's like since like
oh yeah, you're
like,
right.
Since the Lion King and, yes, and all right, this okay. Sort of, like
yeah, that is quite a long time. Yeah, sorry, yeah. It's a good point. Sorry, it's comparative ages. Sorry.
Snow White was the 30s.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that's nearly the birth of sound cinema. Yeah,
we're
sorry.
Nearly in the 2030s.
oh Lord.
Okay. Yeah. But like the Prowler was like properly scary. Kingpin, when he slams down on Spider-Man, like, frightened me.
Yeah.
And I can't believe they murder him. And then they have, like, they see the ramifications of what would happen if somebody like that were to die. And you see the funeral of it. And I was just, I was already, like, a little bit teary-eyed because I was like, oh my God, I'm just watching Spider-Man die. Like, that's horrible to watch that. And then they cut to Stan Lee's cameo, and I was gone. I was just like, oh my God, like, literally after Spider-Man dies, you cut to Stan Lee. Jesus. Like, I just wasn't ready for it.
Yeah. Like, you're actually getting quite emotional just talking about it now.
Yeah, it just...
That's great.
Yeah, it literally just... It's just very, very strange to see somebody...
You've been
that
unspoiled
that means,
by the world, Jack. I think that's really sweet.
Like, just to see somebody like that means so much to you that almost feels...
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's so many reincarnations of him that he almost feels... what's the word? He can't die. What's that called?
Yeah, immortal.
If he was immortal. And there, all of a sudden, he's not. And he dies. And also, like, you know, I'm 26, and the Peter Parker in the movie that dies is 26. Mm. Like, there's something about that that's like, oh, my God. Like,
can I ask you a side question to
this? Please do.
I'm a big Christopher Nolan fan. I think you are too.
Yep, very much so.
You've seen The Prestige.
Yep.
Fine. So I'm doing a 35mm screening of The Prestige down in Cornwall. Again, spoiler-tastic. Don't you think the moment in The Prestige when you realise that the character that doesn't die is dying all the time is really...
Hard.
Really hard.
Yes, yeah.
It's that similar thing about, oh, they're immortal, but no, but the immortality involves dying
over and over again.
Again.
Yeah, horrible. And with that movie especially, it's like, oh my God, the lengths that you'll go to
for your art to
exist. Yeah.
Anyway, so back to spoilers. So.
Yes. So that was hard to watch. And very, very effective for me personally. And then the Prowler stuff. I have a question. Did you know that the Prowler was also Aaron Davis?
No.
So I did know that just from knowing comics.
Okay, fine.
And knowing the lore of the world.
Yeah, no, I didn't know.
Because Donald Glover plays the same character in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Okay.
And little just thing, he mentions in Homecoming, I've got a nephew who I want to keep protected. So they're already confirming that Miles Morales exists.
Okay.
In the Marvel Cinematic
Universe.
Fine.
You see, that's the sort of stuff that I would...
That's the stuff that... That's
yeah, no, of course. And that, yeah, of course. Fine, fine.
Because, like, you have Donald Glover playing Aaron Davis and he says, I've got a nephew. I go, oh, Miles Morales exists. Like, okay. That's cool.
Right.
So
I just went, really? Anyway. That's great, I've got a nephew too. Anyway, moving on.
So yeah, the Prowler being Aaron Davis and having that be the origin story where like he's got a proper bond with him and he's the one, it's the uncle who dies and all that sort of stuff. But number one, Mahershala Ali's performance is incredible.
Yeah.
Like,
Mahershala Ali, who famously won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor for Moonlight.
Which, a similar character. The sort of like,
oh, okay, that's interesting because he's the kingpin. He's bad but good.
Yeah, and but okay, not only that,
the
but
bad
like,
uncle.
He's the one who shows him the way and connects with the kid. And I thought that was.
Yeah, you're right. No, I hadn't thought of that. That's very astute.
Yeah, and
well done, Jack. That's very astute.
stop patting me on the head.
I know. I'm sorry. I actually. That's what
you're
I feel
literally
like.
Patting me on the
I
head.
I literally feel like I'm doing that. well observed.
I thought his performance was so brilliant that it's maybe out of the whole, I thought every cast member was great, but I thought maybe out of all of it, he made the character the most real.
Okay.
Like, I thought that his performance was lifelike.
Right, okay. Yeah, I mean, I didn't know that in advance, but I bought the character.
Yeah, and what happened, what did you feel when it was revealed that he was the bad guy?
There was a twist.
Yeah.
Went, really?
Yeah.
But I thought, but, you know, it's like, wow.
And isn't it, like, the moment on the roof, where he's holding him, like, off the roof, there's a moment where, like, when he pulls that mask back down, where part of me thinks, oh my God, is he pulling that back down so he can just live with the fact that he's going to have to kill his own nephew?
Right.
Like that, all that stuff was like properly scary.
Yeah.
And another thing that was scary about the Prowler was his theme. that siren.
Oh yeah. You
know, that keeps happening. It's not even, you know, because we've had a lot of wongs in cinema since Inception. And this wasn't that. It was this like siren. It was this like screeching, horrible sound. But what I noticed the second time, and I love this detail, because the soundtrack's incredible, both I think the songs and the actual score. But that score, that little siren, is then integrated later into a song that's on the soundtrack for when Miles is Spider-Man. So it's like he's the character is still part of him when he evolves and becomes who he was meant to be. I go hard with it no matter how dark it is. I'm insane, but on my toes. I could keep the world balanced on my nose. And I thought that was such a brilliant little detail. It's just in a song called something about danger, like here comes danger, or like look out danger, I think is what it's called.
Yeah.
And it's the one that plays when he like leaps off that building and like breaks the glass, and that's that beautiful shot where it's upside down and he's like diving into New York.
Yeah,
that soundtrack is playing that theme.
Didn't you think the evocation of New York was really brilliant?
Yes.
You absolutely loved the architecture of it, and I loved the look and feel of the world,
the neon look of it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was
a train running through that doesn't exist.
But that was one of
Does it?
Yes, it's the L train that he's on.
Right.
That train does go through.
No, I mean, the one that's like outside.
Yes, it's the elevator. Yeah, it's the thing that they chase under in the French Connection.
Yeah, but that doesn't exist anymore, does it? That's just a walkway now, isn't it?
Well, there's the elevated train in New York, but you're right, there is now that whole section which is the High Line. I mean, you can walk along and it's a garden, but anyway, but the point is that just the architecture of that stuff is brilliant, and I thought it was a great evocation of that world and the sort of that dream of swinging through it and flying through it, and
yeah.
I just thought was really wonderful. And that, incidentally, is the thing that Raimi's first movie never got right. They never managed to integrate the live-action footage with the clearly animated version of Spider-Man swinging through it.
I think it was actually worse in Spider-Man 2. I think it was.
Oh, really? Okay.
I think it was a little better in Spider-Man 1. But you're right. I think that like what lends Spider-Man to animation is that impossible twisting and turning, and stuff that he can, you know, you could never capture in live-action. And so much so that like the Chris Pine version of Spider-Man, the one who ends up dying.
Yeah.
Is literally the perfect Spider-Man. Like, the moment when it almost reminded me of Batman in a way, just like, I will help you. Like, stay here, I'm going to show you the ropes. And then when he just leaps up that construction, and swings and whips and dives around all of it, when you know, the only Spider-Man theme that plays in it, when he does it, his only Spider-Man theme, I was just like, this is breathtaking. Like, just watching him do all this stuff feels like I've never seen it before. But you've seen Spider-Man a million times in cinema, but you've never seen him do that, because it's impossible for a human person to do those things. So seeing him seeing him at his best, and then obviously seeing all the rest of them come in and do the same sort of stuff, was just visually just a treat.
So what were your quibbles?
I only have a couple of criticisms about it. I would have preferred, and this is just a personal thing, if the story was more about Peter Parker and Miles Morales, and because when they first start and there's that quibble between them, and then he leaves and he's like, I'm gonna go save the world and then go back to my universe, bye kid, and then the kid's like, no, you need to teach me. That dynamic, I really really liked that sort of surrogate father son relationship, and then that sort of gets lost a little bit
with all the other stuff and
the other universes and the MacGuffin plot and things like that, and then it almost just comes back at the end and they just tie it up really quickly, and there's all that stuff which I really like, that where Peter Parker from the Ultimate Universe and Kingpin they've almost got the same story, that they've lost something that they love and they're afraid they're going to repeat their same mistakes. Peter Parker learns to not do that, and Kingpin chooses to continue to be the same, and he's his own downfall. Like, I love all that stuff, but it didn't feel like it was the main focus. And I know it's because it's a kids' movie and it needs to be spectacular, but I think if it was more focused on their relationship back and forth for most of the second act, with all the other stuff interwoven as a second, as a sort of B plot, I think I would have like connected with it even more.
Okay.
Because it felt like that stuff was just, from like a writing point of view, was just sort of rushed in back at the end.
Okay. Are we going to get more Spider-Man, Spider-Verse?
I would assume so. Did you stay for the end credits?
Then? Yes.
Yeah, the Oscar Isaac.
Yeah, I'm not. You're not. You are no longer allowed to leave. There's one thing with the, you know, with all superhero movies is now it's an unwritten law, isn't it? You cannot leave until the curtain.
I can't
basically
believe
closed.
That people do. I'm looking around me like, do you not
it's
know?
It's not finished.
Yeah, and it was such a great ending credits thing because it was like obviously saying that there is somebody who can travel through universes willingly, which is great. But also ending it with the gag of him ending up in the 60s with the, it's become a meme of him pointing and the two Spider-Men that see each other. It's brilliant. I would be shocked if it's been making money into the Spider-Verse?
I imagine it's done fine.
I got a chance to sit down with Phil Lord and Chris Miller. And they are clearly so proud of it. And, you know, after making Solo and getting fired, I bet they were able to have more time on this. I bet
Solo was a bit poo, wasn't it?
It was so rubbish. It's definitely one of my worst of the year.
But it made a ton of money.
Yeah, but I had such a bad time with it. And when I sat down with Phil Lord and Chris Miller, they'd just been nominated for a Golden Globe.
For
Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, fine.
And I bet there's nothing better than being like,
So they were nominated as producers.
Because Spider-Verse has been nominated for Best Animated Feature.
Yeah, fine, that's right, yes, yeah.
And I think it's going to do very well. Okay. Like, I think that it's maybe one of the most unique looking animated things I've ever seen. But also, like, what a brilliant script that Phil Lord wrote, and they were telling me about. Yes, he wrote the original screenplay, and then somebody wrote it with him. The team that they've assembled to do this, not only the animators, but there's three directors on this, and I think most of them are first time directors. And they've clearly what they explained to me was this like film school sort of like feeling about it, which is like we're all just pitching in, we're all just like making this thing together because we like it. And I just think you can tell that this is just made with love, and it's just a bunch of people who wanted to make this movie. You can see it in every frame, you can hear it in every voice.
I think that is probably the key to it, is that even if, like me, you are not an aficionado, you can tell that it's made by people who are, and yet it works for somebody who isn't.
Yes, it's not elitist.
Yeah, and you saying seeing it with a young audience, because in a way I feel like that. I feel like they probably know more than I do, and the greatest kids movies will delight an adult, and I think that that it did that. It played to me, and what I know about Spider-Man wouldn't fill the back of a postage stamp. But I thought I really enjoyed it, and I really understood it, and I just thought it was really fascinating. With the exception of that weird sort of thing that was happening in the background, and I did think at the end I'd happily watch another one of those. That would be fun.
Oh yeah. I mean, I don't know how long it's going to take to animate one of those things again.
It's 4 years each cycle, isn't it?
Oh yeah. I mean, I'll happily wait. And I'll have these forever. Like that was so brilliant, and I'm so glad as well that Sony have finally like got it right. Like they've been trying to do a Sinister Six movie, which is essentially like a villains movie, for years, and they've managed to sort of get them into this. And when it comes to the villains as well, like I didn't think any of the sort of the gender switching or the ethnicity switching, like making Scorpion Spanish and making Doc Ock a woman, didn't feel forced at all. Like it was all like, it wasn't like, hey, we're doing it like this now. It just was.
I
loved that.
I mean, right down to the fact that when I'd seen the trailer and I'd seen the Peter Porker thing, and I thought that's the Simpsons joke about Spider-Pig. Spider-Pig does whatever a Spider-Pig does. And then you go, it's fine.
From a when. No, we can't.
He's a pig. All right, well, that seems like a good note to end on. Jack, thanks ever so much.
Thank
I look forward
much.
To you coming back.
Yeah, I'm going to just stay here holding the microphone until until it happens again.
All right, well, I'll leave you with your thoughts.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Well, that's it for this week. Jack Howard will be back very soon to discuss awards, nominations and wins. And remember, if you've enjoyed this episode of Kermit on Film, then please do subscribe. Thanks for listening.